So I actually believe that an armed people is a free people. It is the ultimate democracy. It is worth 1,000 times more than the right to vote. And as said, an armed and military educated people also constitute a really strong defense line for the country.
Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. This is episode number 20. My name is Fredrik Wedeland, and with me, as always, is Simon Lindberg. How are you doing, Lindberg?
Greetings and hello. I am just fine, thanks. No problems at all.
Do you have spring weather in Dalarna as well?
Yes, definitely spring weather. However, it's quite a different. I mean, Sweden is a really, really large and long country. And I am born and raised in southern parts, now living in the middle parts of the country, I would say. But still, spring varies a lot between southern parts and middle parts. I mean, here we still have snow and ice everywhere, but still, yeah. it's very hot. You feel it's spring, but I mean, in Skåne there is hardly any snow in the winter. So,
yeah,
but it's nice with spring at least. But I'm actually quite tired of the snow now. I'm tired of just looking at it because it's not like, you know, during the winter it's lots of snow and it's nice, but now it's just it's getting less and less and less, and it's just slippery everywhere. And no, I'm just tired of it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. and I long for it. Yes,
already. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, should we continue with the...
I believe we should not talk about this for several hours, no. I
think we should. It's nice to talk about the weather.
Yeah, it is. But yeah. But I think our listeners do not listen to Leadership Perspective, because hearing about Swedish weather, I think there is other interests.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to talk in the introduction about Ukraine, because it... may well be worth mentioning something about it from a leadership perspective as well.
Yeah, we are a little bit late on the ball, you can say, because the Leadership Perspective is only out every second month, and the war has been going on for like a month now. So, but of course, there is other, we have translated articles, and also Nordic Frontier and so on have gone through it. So, but still, you're right. It's important that we at least say something about it from this podcast as well.
Yeah, and we spoke about it in Swedish, but that doesn't help American listeners.
Exactly.
Or Italian. Yeah. But regarding the conflict in Ukraine, first of all, I want to say that I think it is tragic that we are seeing another European brothers' war on European soil. For those who do not know or imagine anything else, Ukrainians, Russians, and the Belarusians are basically the same people. To put it briefly, all three of them emanate from the Kiev Rus Empire. Then they split up in the 13th century, to much later go under the same flag again, to today constitute three different countries. They are ethnically very similar. Yes, Russia has a larger proportion of people who speak Uralic languages, preferably Finnish and Estonian, but also Sami or Mongolian, if you like. At the same time, Russia also has a higher proportion of Germanic blood than the other two countries. The three peoples or the three countries have a very large proportion of East Slavic and also South Slavic blood. They are to be regarded as East Slavic people. And in my view, there is no more difference between them than there is between the Nordic peoples. And you can check this out for yourself by looking at the genetic map. So, it is a brothers' war, a European civil war, and however you look at it, it is a war that causes dead white human lives. But the war in Ukraine is the US war and the EU war. You can call them the West, globalists, Judeo-American interests, or in short, just Jews. But this is their war. The EU represent the Jewish interests here in Europe. Zelensky himself says, if one is to believe what he says, that NATO told him that Ukraine will not be allowed to join NATO, but that they will pretend that Ukraine will join to provoke Russia. Let's say that the Jewish president is lying. At least they wanted a conflict of some kind. For those of us who are not part of the conflict, not a direct part of the conflict, it is important that we do not let Jews play out us against other whites, unless they are whites who have betrayed a race, that is, our own politicians and so on. We must remember that even if it was Russia that invaded Ukraine, the damage that will befall our people is the fault of the United States and the European Union. That is the fault of our corrupt politicians. The sanctions that are hitting Russia will definitely hurt that country. At the same time, Russia has prepared for this. It has already had sanctions against it since 2014. It's used to being able to live with a different standard of living. And it also has partners in China, India, Brazil, and so on. Russia will not be a new North Korea. Those who, on the other hand, may be seriously harmed by the US and the EU sanctions are our own peoples. There may well be food crisis, energy crisis, oil and fuel crisis. Together with the refugee crisis in Europe and the billions and billions of kroners already being pumped into Ukraine, as well as inflation. We will not be prepared for that. It will come to us as a shock. And when the discontent comes, and it will come, we must turn that discontent against the treacherous governments. And if there will be a World War III, we cannot be fooled into killing other whites there either. Our goal must instead be to crush the globalists and take back our own countries. And when we do, then we must ensure that there will never be another brothers' war on the European soil again. So that's my take on the Ukrainian conflict. No more European civil wars.
Yeah, very very well spoken, I must say. And you are completely right. It's also in the different written statements that I have done and so on. We clearly take no one's part in this war. We stand for a third way solution where we take the people's part. And also, of course, the thing you talk about that we must do in the Nordic countries, we face war. This is also what we have hoped for and maybe still hope for, that Russians or Ukrainians or whoever does when the smoke settles, that they look into the situation, use it the way they can to actually make a good state, make a good home for white people, a nationalistic state, and that they overthrow their corrupt leaders.
Yeah, hopefully they do.
Mm.
So, but we will come back to the, or at least indirectly speak about the Ukraine conflict again later on. So, but we go on. Before that, we have the segment, what has happened in the struggle since the last episode. And it is from the end of January till now, when we record in the end of March. So what has happened in the struggle?
Yeah, during this period, there has been conducted a little bit more activities than usual, as more than 200 activities have been carried out in the Nordic countries during these last 8 weeks. As usual, I will guide you through the best ones in the different activities, ranging from everything like camping overnight in the wilderness to public ones like square meetings with National Socialist speeches in the city centers. And if we start with the internal ones, there has been, for example, an intense physical training day in Stockholm that ended with dipping in the icy water on a frozen lake. There was a lecture held by me in Dalarna, where I compared the struggle of Horst Wessel and the Sturmabteilung in Germany 100 years ago with the Nordic resistance movement struggles on the streets in the Nordic countries today. They have trained rappelling in southern Sweden and had social days in Denmark with games, trainings and lectures. There was a wilderness weekend in the Norwegian mountains and a social blut kind of gathering on Iceland. The most outstanding one during this period is probably an overnight stay and the hiking in the winter landscape of Dalarna in Sweden a couple of months ago now. It was supposed to be on skis, but due to a somewhat warmer winter than usual, you know, global warning, it was changed into ordinary winter hike with different challenges on the way, like camp building, push-ups in the snow, navigation, and also here a refreshing bath in the cold frozen lake. And even more impressive on the same topic is that the Swedish activist Marcus Hansson, he completed his own personal challenge living outside during winter, staying in an army tent for 3 months in a row. He cleaned himself and washed his clothes outside, prepared food outside, and slept alone in the tent for this whole time. And what is extra impressive with this challenge is that he did not do this instead of taking part in the ordinary struggle. No, instead, on the days when there were activities, he lived an ordinary activist life and participated in those, except when the activities were done and everyone else were driving home to their warm houses and apartments, Marcus Hansson drove to his cold tent in the winter forest. And I find this achievement to be truly remarkable. A little bit crazy as well, but mostly remarkable. A true adventure and a true challenge. And to challenge yourself to become a better person is definitely a part of our National Socialist worldview. However, many people that are into these types of challenges, they do it instead of participating in the struggle. And then it actually becomes totally worthless. It doesn't matter how good of a person and how good of a human being you are, how well educated and how well physically in shape you are. if you do not use that mind, body, and intellect for the very important National Socialist cause, then you're not a good person anyway. Then you're just a waste of oxygen, actually. The fighters in our rank, with Marcus Hansson as one of many role models, they are the opposite, though. To keep them alive, to keep them well, to keep them fighting, that is probably the best thing oxygen can be used for.
Yeah, I think it's remarkable. And I have some experience living in military tent, but not that long, and 3 weeks a row at a time when doing the compulsory military training. But I have some experience in it, and I can say, when you say that Marcus Hansson doing a struggle by day and then coming back to the tent by night, people might think that, well, he's out in the ordinary life and it's not that hard. But when you do that, it gets harder, because you come home, you come to the tent, and you must, you're frozen, it's winter, you have to get a build up a fire and get food, and then it gets harder. It's much easier if you have all the day in the tent, if you know what I mean, or yeah, the area around it. So I think that makes it just harder. So
yeah, and more impressive, as said, because it is often the other way, that the people only do this instead of the struggle.
Yeah.
But this whole story about Marcus Hansson, it was maybe a bit off topic. I move on to the public activities. In southern Sweden, they launched a propaganda campaign on the theme for blood and soil, where the green questions and aspects of National Socialism are the ones focused on, with a specially printed flyer and banner following a square meeting where they held a speech in the city of Ängelholm, a couple of public leafleting in different cities, and also several banner drops, but also quite a lot of ordinary handing out leaflets to people's home on different occasions. Also, outside of Stockholm, in Nacka, our members have focused on the green question by participating at an environmental protest outside the city council building in Nacka. The local politicians of the community have decided to cut down a very old forest in the city to build new apartments on site. So this was what our guys was protesting against, together with other non-National Socialist environmental fighters. And of course, housing could be important, but I mean, the only reason there is a need for new houses to be built in Sweden is because of the mass immigration. If we repatriate the around 2 million racial foreigners that reside within our Swedish borders, there would be plenty of houses for everyone. There would even be empty buildings. But the forest they chopped down is irreplaceable and takes hundreds of years to grow back again. And moving forward to more ordinary political subjects, there has been numerous public activities all over Sweden during this period, in the cities of Karlstad, Kristianstad, and Jönköping, just to mention a few of them. On the one-year remembrance day of the terror attack in Vetlanda, where an Arab guy went amok with a knife and stabbed several people in the city center in the middle of the day, a doll was hanged up with a rope around its neck, with a sign carrying the terrorist's name on the chest. Then a couple of days later, on the weekend, to follow up on this, a square meeting with a speech was held talking about the attack. And this also led to some media coverage. The police was not happy that this doll was hanged up, and they saw it very, very dreadful that someone wants to do such a thing to the nice Arab citizen who stabbed people in Vietnam.
Yeah, the misunderstood
refugee. Yeah, exactly. Yes. And then in southern Sweden, in again in the city of Örkelljunga this time, a new method was tested out, driving around with a car and trailer covered in banners, playing really loud nationalistic music, and then between the songs shouting slogans. Our activists, they drove around in several smaller communities doing this, and got a lot of people to turn around and look at the equipage. Then a peace protest happened in Stockholm because of the war, with the message "No more brother wars." There has been a couple of these protests, and for some reason they have been heavily harassed by the Swedish police. I guess the system makes it clear that they don't want any peace before more goyims have lost their lives. And maybe even more so, that they definitely do not want people to believe that a hateful monster terrorist neo-Nazis has anything at all to do with peace and love. That is not the message they want us to be associated with. And speaking of us being associated with anything other than hate, I would also like to mention the International Women's Day. First of all, we released a very good article on the topic from a new female writer with the title "Feminism is the Worst Enemy to Women." I sadly do not believe it has been translated as we speak. Maybe it has been translated when this is published, but hopefully you will be able to read it sooner or later on NordicResistanceMovement.org. Something even more interesting, though, is that on the International Women's Day, we flanked a communist feminist demonstration in Stockholm with our banner "Peace for Nordic Women." So five national socialists stood against 300 red feminists. And the Reds, they totally forgot about women's rights, or they did not want to side with national socialists, so instead, they just started ranting about crushing racism. And with the odds 300 against 5, you might think they took the opportunity to actually crush some racists. But no. As usual, they were just screaming like little girls and giving the Greta Thunberg looks to our guys that proudly stood their ground against these hordes from Mordor.
Was it just women, or was it... Was it little girls and little gays?
Yes, it was also some men, you cannot say, but yes, small boys and small girls calling themselves feminists and communists. Yes,
English cigarettes.
Yeah, it's not. It was not only women. No.
Oh.
Yes, then not near, but still a somewhat similar situation, you can say, happened during a public leaflet activity in the city of Sölvesborg, where four of our guys was facing 15 male foreigners that tried to provoke and make threats to against our guys. But our guys, they stood their ground proudly, as always, despite being outnumbered. And soon enough, the Arabs and Africans, they left the place in shame. They are used to, I know we have talked about this before in Leadership Perspective. I think it was when you were at some activity, Weidland, in the Gothenburg area. But
yeah.
But these racial foreigners, they are so used to that Swedes are backing down, so that they can follow them and attack them on the run, attack them in the back when they are fleeing. But in this situation, where they were met with the proud Swedish men that did not even move an inch, instead the foreigners, they understood their place and left the scene without any violence occurring. So law of nature, you could say. If you just show that you're not backing down, often that is enough, and you do not need to break any laws to win the battle. And on another note, some important news from this period is that Jakob Willem Andersen has been officially appointed as a new chief of the Danish branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement. And with this, we have also seen a massive uprising in the frequency of activism in Denmark. To mention some things, in the small Danish town of Sandved, the inhabitants were really upset because a new refugee center for criminal immigrants was set up there. And after several protests by the worried residents of Sandved, then the local politicians, they finally hired a safety guard to work on behalf of the immigrants. So they did not hire any guards to work for the people, just hired guards to, because they were afraid that these poor criminal immigrants, they would get badly treated by the Sandved residents. So, of course, these people were even more mad, and the Nordic resistance movement went there. They held a campaign day in the area where they had many good conversations with a lot of people, and they put up posters, they handed out flyers, and they also put barricade tape around the refugee center. Then the Danes have also conducted a visually nice-looking lead banner activity with smoke grenades. And further on, they have made a special activism directed towards a fitness and wellness center in the city of Randers after they were receiving information about reports from there on how racial foreigners harassed the Danish visitors. I should mention that in Norway, a big Dresden's Remembrance Day was held with banners and posters in several cities. And I would also really like to mention that in Finland, National Socialist activists, of course not having anything to do with the banned Finnish branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement, but still National Socialists, they boxed in the statue of Lenin in the city of Turku. So that instead of seeing the statue of the cold-blood Jewish communist Lenin, you saw a wooden box painted with the name and logo to the activist organization Bojan Vartiu. So a nice and spectacular move, thinking outside of the box, literally speaking. Yeah, I think I will settle there. As always, very active period with lots of good activities for the Nordic race and nation.
Yeah, nice to hear so much about the non-Swedish countries, especially Denmark seems to be, well, the struggle is going on in Denmark. So
absolutely.
Nice,
absolutely.
Nice to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going going forward with the ideological, tactical, philosophical question. Defense policy in the new Nordic countries, because a crucial part of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia is actually about defense policy, and we have not talked about this issue in the leadership perspective yet, so we thought it was time to go into that topic. A good start might be to find out a little quickly what the Nordic countries' defense policy looks like today.
Yeah, I can answer that with a question. What defense policies? No, but really, Sweden and Finland, they once had quite strong military forces, actually. And this was actually not too long ago. But in order to pay welfare checks for the increasing number of racial foreigners that our politicians let over our borders, the military have been more and more disassembled. Today, our defensive force is a true yoke. In Sweden, literally spoken, since the Swedish military forces, they have used recruitment campaigns with pictures of soldiers that have rainbow flags painted on their nails, and since they have had a huge block participating in the pride demonstrations each year for gay and pedophile rights. So the defense force in Sweden is totally bankrupt, both when it comes to resources and when it comes to morale. They have made it more important to stand up for political correctnesses and the culture of Marxism than to be an efficient defense force.
Yeah, I just want to add that it is not just the military participating in the gay pride, but it is also the commander in chief.
yeah.
of Sweden going to the gay parade dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So this is Sweden and part of Finland, as I mentioned. In Iceland, there is no army at all, actually. They don't got any army, except they have a few American soldiers that have different operational bases on the island, actually, but not any army of their own. Denmark and Norway, they still have some defense, but then they are part of the globalist forces of NATO, so they are bound up to that force. So, in other words, half of the Nordic countries, they have almost no defense whatsoever, and the other half are 100% dependent on globalist forces that clearly stand against the survival of our people. And this is sad, because otherwise we have a very good reputation when it comes to, for example, creating military weapons in the Nordic countries. So, but sadly, we do not use these weapons ourselves anymore, but send them to others.
Yeah, it's sad, because we also, in the 90s, we still had a good army, good military in Sweden. So, but then the politicians went bananas and shut it all down. And they melted down the weapons. And we had food storage and stuff like that, and just burn it. So they are crazy, these traders. So
yeah, and extremely many of these bunkers that were just filled with cement, and really crazy.
And we also had medicines, and people complained about that in the COVID, in the early. When the COVID arrived and the people did not know how dangerous it was, and they needed medicine and stuff like that, masks, and then people complained that we have just burned it, everything, and we could have it regardless of there was a COVID or not. We could have it in our hospitals, and yeah. But anyway. Do you think it is good to be dependent on NATO or other sovereign countries to protect our people and country? Is it roughly what it would look like even if we had power of the Nordic countries?
Definitely not, and absolutely not, are the answers to both of those questions. I believe... Actually, this is one of the main questions in order to state that you actually are a free and independent nation. In order to be sovereign, you need to be able to protect yourself without counting on the help from anyone else. The Nordic Resistance Movement would like to strengthen and modernize all branches of the armed Nordic forces. Our goal is to be able to defend our country against any force in the world. So therefore, our military force must be strong enough to be able to take the battle against NATO or Russia or China if necessary, or against whoever that might possibly want to violate our sovereignty somewhere in the future. And with the world being more and more overpopulated and the resources running out, I do believe that military conflicts will probably be more common again in the future, and the National Socialist Nation will stand ready for this, ready to defend our ancestral home and ready to defend the lives of our unique Nordic peoples. So, with this being said, of course we can cooperate with other countries. We can also have the military allies and defense pact with other nations of the world, but we should never be dependent on them. And this also means that we would make Denmark and Norway leave NATO as soon as possible when we have taken over power in the Nordic countries.
Yeah, With a strengthened defense in the way you talk about, would the Nordic countries have an offensive or non-offensive or defensive defense policy?
We are not in any way imperialists or warmongers. I think this is very, very important to tell, and because the propaganda picture of National Socialism is that it actually is an imperialist worldview. But we are not imperialists. We are not warmongers. The reason why we would like to build a strong army is to maintain peace. It is to be able to protect our people and our land. If you want peace, prepare for war. However, we would like to also have the possibility of being offensive if that is necessary. We must have the capability to intervene in our region or have the ability to help sympathetic countries against a common enemy. To have a offensive capability is, as I see it, a natural part of a strong defense. So therefore also that would be necessary. But the goal with the defense force is, of course, to maintain peace, to protect ourselves.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about the compulsory military service. I hope people know that what that is. We had to translate to look for some good translations before here. But what would that look like in the new Nordic?
It would be mandatory for all men to go through this military training, and it would take at least 2 years to be able to teach everything that's needed to create strong and manly men, but also to really be able to teach them to think and act like soldiers and with the necessary skills to be able to do that. And all of these important things could otherwise be very hard or maybe even impossible to do in just some few months, as it usually is. So, we want a long and stable period of mandatory military service for all men. But we also want to give all women an at least short and very basic military education so that they as well are at least somewhat prepared for the worst. But we would also like to give them the possibility to voluntarily sign up for the full time as the men does. Then a very, very important question with our compulsory military service is that after you have graduated, you get to keep your service weapon also in your civilian life. So we want to create a militarily well-educated people, both among men and women, that also stores their weapons at home so they can easily and quickly gain access to them if needed. This would make it extremely hard and extremely costly to invade Nordic territory for any foe around the world.
So keeping the military weapon like in Switzerland then. But would that not pose enormous risks to security in the country if there were so many sharp weapons in the society?
No, actually, it would be the opposite. It would be a safeguard for a sound and protected society with low crime rates and probably close to zero corruption among the rulers. Yeah, a bit like Switzerland, but even better. And actually, our weapon laws in general would be much, much more liberal than they are today. And also, the ordinary weapon laws, not only the military rifles, they would also be a little bit like Switzerland. So many comparisons to that, but that I think Switzerland is the best modern example on how to deal with these issues on arms. So that is kind of a role model. And I mean, weapons, they are dangerous in the hands of mean men. In the hands of criminals, weapons are dangerous. Weapons are not dangerous in the hands of ordinary citizens. And this is especially true if the citizens are caring, loving, and understanding National Socialists. You do not rape or rob a person if you know there is a big risk you would get shot if you do it. And in a society where firearms are illegal, or where it's very, very hard to get the permits needed, like in Sweden today, for example, then the criminals are the only ones that have access to guns, and so they could use this power to terrorize the civilian masses. However, in a sound society, ordinary caring people are the ones with guns, the ones with the power, so that they can protect their property, their families, and their lives. Also, a lot of weapons among the people is a guarantee against a bad leadership. Because if a leadership is extremely corrupt, an armed population would revolt against that leadership. But when the people don't have any arms, and only the police have arms, it is way easier for the politicians to just run them over. Then all the voices of opposition could be quiet down using enough violence. But this is way harder or even possible if the people fight back with their own legal guns. So I actually believe that an armed people is a free people. It is the ultimate democracy. It is worth 1,000 times more than the right to vote. And as said, an armed and military educated people also constitute a really strong defense line for the country.
Yeah. Do you think that nationalists who get the chance should do compulsory military service or other military training?
Mostly yes, but also no to at least some small extent. I definitely believe it is a good thing to have all kind of knowledge. And I do also believe that you grow as a man by doing military service. You learn discipline and you learn the power of organization. I think it's a good step on your way from youth into adulthood. Why I still also to some extent say no is because that it is, of course, can be bad if the training ties you up so that you are forced to defend a corrupt state. I mean, I am not a patriot in the way that I would fight for Sweden and the Nordic countries no matter what. No, I am a national socialist that fights for my race and what is best for my people. And right now, as we speak, the current state is bad for my people, and therefore I would not die for Sweden as it looks today. And if I would not like to take arms for the current state, am I then okay with being fought to use arms by it? A philosophical question maybe, and something probably everyone needs to reflect on their own. But in general, though, of course, it is good to have knowledge and the experience and knowledge of being a soldier is most certainly a very, very valuable skill, I would say.
Yeah, and overall, I think when we were young, the compulsory military service was mandatory for everyone, and you learn discipline. And I think the religion of peace does not want us to be disciplined men. They want us to play Xbox instead and just doing drugs and stuff like that. So in that case, compulsory military service is good, even though you don't have the war with your in your doorsteps. It's good anyway. So, but I agree you on the other point. I don't want to fight for the globalist country Sweden either.
No, but as I said, it is like you say, and as I also was into, it's not. It is of course good training. I mean, if there are a war, or not even a war, but just a survival situation, then you would. Then it can differ definitely on life or death if you have this knowledge or not. But it's not all about that. It is also about, as I said, making youngsters into men. It creates manly men. It creates men that knows that they do not have as many limits as people otherwise think they have. They are afraid of doing everything, but I guess you learn how to pressure those limits in the military service.
Yeah, and other stuff that you must deserve to have a view. People today, young people today, just have views on everything. Mm. But when you do that, when you do the military training, they you learn to take orders and also give orders. But and both of them are important. So,
and also actually, it could be important for the Volksgemeinschaft with everyone. It doesn't matter if you're born into a rich family or a poor family. If you want to work as a lawyer, or you want to work as a plumber, in the military, you are all in the same clothes and you're all in the same position. And I think, yeah, I think such things are important to grow a mutual understanding, a bonding with the people over the classes, so to say, and create Volksgemeinschaft.
Yeah, and that's the only period in life when it is that way, because in school, the people with higher ambitions go to some programs, and the more practical people goes to the practical education. And after the school, well, then we have the workers and the bosses. They are on the same side, but not working together. Yeah, the workers work with the workers, and the others, the bosses with the bosses, and so. It would be great to have it like that, actually, for the Volksgemeinschaft. Mm. Okay, another a tricky question, perhaps, but would the new Nordic state have access to nuclear weapons?
I guess this is the million-dollar question, actually.
Yeah.
I will answer like this. Personally, I absolutely detest nuclear weapons. It is probably the worst invention ever made by humankind. It is an invention that not only eradicates your enemies, but that also wipes out nature, plants, and animals along with them. It even destructs all chances for new life to be created for a very, very long time. Maybe it even compromises new life on the place of impact for all eternity. Atom bombs, they can destroy us all tomorrow with no turning back. Not only all mankind, but also the planet and nature as a whole. So it is absolutely diabolic. But again, if you want peace, you must prepare for war. And as long as other states have access to nuclear weapons, in order for the National Socialist North to be able to defend itself, also we must have at least as powerful weapons as our possible enemies. A little bit like I talked about with liberal gun laws and armed civilians before, but in a bigger scale. You won't rob someone if you know that you can get shot. If you know that if you attack us, you have the possibility of being nuked, then you're probably going to think one extra time before taking such action. But with proper research, though, I really hope and really believe that we could probably come up with even more efficient weapons in time, but that does not have the same devastating effects on nature as a whole. That would be my hopes and goals, at least.
Yeah, good. But like I said, it's a destructive weapon. Mm. But to reconnect with Russia and Ukraine, would the new Nordic state have entered the conflict as an active or passive actor? Meaning, would we have supported with armed forces, material, or weapons, or stood completely outside?
Yeah, as partly said, at least in the beginning after your introduction, in this conflict there are no good sides. It is one evil superpower against another one. And Nordic Resistance Movement will never support any evil superpowers. And so we would not have taken any side in this conflict. We would definitely not have taken a passive side by sending weapons either. We wouldn't have taken any side. Humanitarian help, though, that is a different question. And of course, we would aid the affected white civilians, but we would help them on all sides. We would help Ukrainians as well as Russians. And no matter if they live in Ukraine or in Russia or in Donbas and the other separatist Russian regions. So we would not take a side either there on who to help or not. We would help all whites. But then also, as I talked about before, when the smoke settles, maybe we could identify some good nationalist forces that will try to take advantage of the situation that has risen. And here is where I believe that our main help would be, to help Ukrainian and Russian national socialists to overthrow their corrupt governments and create better sovereign white states. And if such an attempt was made properly, a serious attempt was made with good chances of success, this is something we would definitely support in all ways we could, with all the kinds of support you mention in the question, if necessary and if possible. Against Putin, against Zelensky, for the white race, for the sake of our kinsmen in the East, in support of the local national socialists, because one thing is certain. No matter if NATO or Russia tries to intervene, white revolution is the only solution.
Yes, and that's that for this time. Hope you liked our episode. You can send questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective, and you can do that to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more of us on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. Next episode will be out the 25th of May. See you then. Bye.
Yes, thank you for listening. And next time we will share everything about our 1st of May Labor Day activism. Hope you conduct some as well. White activism all around the world on 1st of May. Take care. Bye.